Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
At Payne and Pendergast with you into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Man, good weekend coming up. We got Rockets OKC tonight. The Astros win yesterday. No Astros tonight because Minnesota is too stupid to put a roof on their stadium. They've got to leave that extra day open in case there's a snow out of their opener, which there wasn't, but the temperature was close to accommodating one. Low 40s yesterday. Ugh.
I don't like seeing the guys with the hoodies on.
No.
Caratini had a hoodie on. Who was the other? Was Brendan Rodgers the other one wearing a hoodie?
Brendan Rodgers had the thing where only like your nose and your eyes are poking out of it, like that.
Yeah.
The stocking thing over your face.
Yeah.
Joe Espada looked very comfortable. He had the ski cap on and the kind of the heavy. I like that heavy coat he had on. It's only usable like 2 weeks out of the year here in Houston, but I'm like, I would buy that. They had the orange sleeves and the blue kind of torso, and he had the shades on and a scarf. He looked comfy in that dugout.
Whatever Correa was wearing under his jersey, it made him look fat, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was
good. Made him look like he had skinny legs with a fat torso.
What do you think of bearded Carlos? He's got a pretty heavy beard going right now.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I thought I don't know. It's like when it's, you know what it reminds me of? Greg Williams with his, the old defensive coordinator.
Defensive coordinator.
He's ultimate try hard trying to look like a badass.
Oh, yeah.
Dyed black goatee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
I felt like Carlos Correa. I was like, that's not you, man. I don't know. You're not a beard guy.
I like it. All right. We had Nick Caserio on yesterday. Texans EVP and GM. We had him on for a good long time. If you want to listen to the entire conversation, you can on the Payne and Pendergast podcast. You can listen to it on the Odyssey app. Good conversation, getting you ready for the draft. We did a lot of digging into some of the things that have happened so far this offseason with him. Let's start with the offensive line. We asked him yesterday, clearly they're trying to find something that didn't exist in that room last year. I think their behavior would indicate that. They've gotten rid of a few guys. They brought a lot of new guys in. What are you trying to find that was missing in that O-line room last year?
No, there's never anything specific. I think what you try to do is after each season, you kind of take a step back, make an evaluation. All right, what happened? Is there anything that we feel that we need to do moving forward? And there's going to be change. In the Laramie situation, that was something that, you know, we weren't certainly intent on doing or that we were motivated to do. I think when we just looked at the situation, we felt that it was the opportunity in front of us that made sense. Washington had a need, and then we consummated the trade, and, you know, ultimately, we felt like that was the best decision for the Texans at that particular time. So we made, I would say, changes offensively from Coach Kaley to Coach Popovich. So from the coordinator to the offensive line. So that's kind of step one. How it all transpires and how it all sorts itself out, TBD.
All right, so that was Nick talking about the O-line. What's interesting, I love going back and listening to it a second time. What's interesting to me there is the implication that, not even the implication, he outright said, like, the Laramie thing wasn't something we went out with intent to go do. You know, they didn't put Laramie Tunsil on a eBay trade block or anything like that. But what's interesting to me is that, okay, that, and I think Nick is open to a lot of things if you were to call him, but I think there are certain players that he would hang up pretty quickly if you even asked about a trade for. Like if you called asking about a trade for CJ Stroud or Will Anderson or Derek Stingley Jr., it's a non-starter.
Laramie it would Tunsil- have, and if it was, or at the very least, even if he has a policy of listening to all trades, it would be a mega blockbuster crazy compensation trade.
There would be a first-round pick involved. There were no first-round picks involved in this trade. Like he was open to that Laramie conversation, obviously, because they consummated a trade that I think was, by all, you've pointed this out several times, by all accounts, the people who pay attention to draft charts and whatnot, and whatnot, when you add up what all these picks are worth, most people are like, okay, the compensation makes sense. What doesn't make sense to people is why you would trade your best pass protector in the first place for a line that protected C.J. Stroud poorly last year.
Well, and even the, you know, in the way he framed it, that it's not something that they were actively looking for, it's kind of, it can still hint at perhaps how they felt about him. The same way as like, hey, I wasn't looking to meet a woman at the bar that night, fall in love with her, and then tell my wife it's over. You know, like, okay, there's probably something going on between you and your wife that led to you being open to that scenario. You met a woman at the bar, go to the payphone, call her up, and like, honey, I'm trading you for a second and a fourth rounder.
That's right. That's Nick's open to a lot of things. And so, Laramie gone, not just, you know, Nick said, not just one thing. Seth, you asked him this, were there times it was a question you asked about just maybe not being on the same page in the offensive line room yesterday.
Yeah. Right? And I genuinely wasn't trying to pile on Bobby or anything like that, but the way that D'Amico has talked about the importance of having one voice in the O-line room, the importance of knowing how to go out and execute you want to instead of having to discuss, you know, how to do things, that was there as simple as, hey, the O-line coach, some of the players, and the offensive coordinator might have all just been seeing things through different filters or different lenses?
Yeah, I'm not going to speak for D'Amico, but, I mean, you know, there's always a lot of communication that takes place. It's never one particular thing. So, in the end, going back to when we made the decision, when D'Amico made the decision that he did to move on from Bobby, certainly wasn't an easy decision. So, I'd say the fact that Nick and Cole have some level of experience together, I mean, it always helps when any time that you have an opportunity to work with one another. Again, like, we've won 20 games over the last 2 years. So, like, a lot of things that we were doing, you know, couldn't have been all that bad. So, but, you know, we're just trying to figure out, like, all right, what's the best thing for the Texans? What do we think we got to do moving forward? I think we'll work through it here. We'll try to have a good offseason, you know, try to get the players, let's say, in good condition. And then once we get to training camp, obviously we're going to have more information. We're going to have a better idea of where we are. And the whole goal is to just make sure that we're as prepared as we possibly can be for whoever the opponent is week one.
I think two things that he said there were interesting to me. One, emphasizing in my mind that it was D'Amico's decision to let go of Bobby Slowick.
Absolutely.
And ultimately, I think that's one, maybe Caserio wanted Bobby Slowick gone a long time ago. I have no idea. But that's got to be a decision that the head coach makes. And D'Amico had to come to arrive at that on his own. But the other is, when Nick says it's multiple things, yeah, that checks out based on the fact that three of your starting offensive linemen from last year are gone. The offensive line coach is gone. It sounds like he was probably going to retire at some point anyway. Mm-hmm. And the offensive coordinator is gone. That's multiple things. Yeah. That's five key pieces from your O-line last year are completely gone. So it was as D'Amico had said at the combine, there needs to be a reset on the offensive line. They reset it about as much as you possibly can.
Yeah. I don't think this was a series of decisions that Nick was presented with that each made sense, and you happen to wind up with an O-line room that's completely overturned with coaching that's completely overhauled.
Yeah.
This feels like something they sat down and said, all right, this is the one part of our team that we need to do a complete overhaul. This is what kept it, like Nick in that cut right there pointed out. He said, hey, look, we've won 10 games each of the last couple of years. It hasn't been all bad. No, you're exactly right, Nick. Most of it's been pretty good. If the offensive line was average last year, you might have been playing in an AFC title game. You know, you might have been seeded higher than fourth in the AFC. It might have been a two seed if you could have won games against Tennessee and the Jets, you know, held on to a lead against the Lions. And the offensive line is at the center of the failures in all these games. You know?
I was going over my notes from one of the games last year, just a week ago, and I can't remember which game it was, but my main takeaway was that, okay, we've got these injuries, we've got this other thing going on the team, and somehow the issue is this 100% completely healthy offensive line. This is the problem here in that particular game, and that you could say that about many points during the season. It used to drive me insane when I would see national analysts towards the end of last season say, well, you know, they've struggled on the offensive line, but they've had a lot of injuries. Like, what the hell are you talking about? No, they've been relatively healthy.
Yeah, yeah.
What on earth are you talking about?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether they're healthy or injured. They're awful.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a frustrating misconception. I think the other thing too, just you know, with respect to Nick and D'Amico making these moves, you know, an interview with him is not the time to go injecting our opinion into it. But what I would tell him if we had, you know, if it was a longer form where we were exchanging opinions about things, I would say, look, most Texan fans are happy that you traded Laremy Tunsil. Most Texan fans are happy that you're tearing down the offensive line room and rebuilding it. Now, they're not happy that we have to go through a rebuild like this, but that's water under the bridge. Nick's done largely really good things as the GM here. Most Texan fans are happy that we have a new offensive coordinator offensive line coach.
Most Texans fans were happy with the Laremy Tunsil trade. I think the counter to that is that I think most Texans fans are also skeptical of Nick's ability to put together a good offensive line.
Yes.
And I think there's been frustration that there hasn't been some corresponding wow moves after you got rid of Laremy Tunsil. Mm-hmm. And that's where we'll see what happens with the draft. And, you know, this time last year is when the Stephon Diggs trade happened.
Yeah.
It was post-free agency rush before the draft. There's still room for that. I'd be really surprised if the starting offensive line, I'll be somewhat surprised if the starting offensive line in September is made of completely guys who are on the roster right now.
Brandon Scott, when he was in for you earlier this week, proclaimed that he thinks the starting offensive line is in the building right now.
Yeah.
And it's five guys in the building right now. But I don't think it's a smoking hot take or anything like that.
No, and I don't think, and it's totally feasible even if they draft a couple of offensive linemen.
Yes. 'Cause
I think they brought in veteran players that you could totally feel comfortable with starting at day one. I'm more nervous about Jarrett Patterson or Juice Scruggs than I am most of the guys they brought in as free agents, because they're veteran guys who are established players. Ed Ingram's the only one that you really that I'd probably be most nervous about. He was benched in Minnesota last year. But a lot of the other guys are just solid veteran players that they're not Pro Bowlers, but you can start them in the NFL.
Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. We'll get to more Nick Caserio in just a second. What's the likelihood of us being upset this time next year with the offensive line?
This time next year.
So we've got the 2025 season under our belts.
Let's say January of next year.
January.
Because this time next year, okay, maybe they do make aggressive moves.
Yeah.
If it goes as bad this year as it did last year on the offensive line, then you start to wonder whether C.J. Stroud wants to do that. If C.J. Stroud's just kind of like, no, hey, man, you know what? I'm comfortable with my deal. No, if they try to extend me right now, I'd say no, just because I want to just keep playing football. I'd start to get nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I would too.
So is the question, what are the odds?
What's the likelihood that we're upset with the offensive line, that we feel the same way next year that we feel this year?
I think that, for one, the offensive line, because I'm not trying to be delusional and you know, think that I know that Nick Caley is going to be an awesome offensive coordinator or something. We have no way of knowing. We have zero clue whether he's going to be a good offensive coordinator or not. I do think, just by virtue of the way I think he wants to operate, the things that he's talked about in his press conferences, I think they're going to be a more fundamentally sound offensive line. And if you take last year's offensive line, exact same humans, everything else, and just make them a fundamentally make them a play more fundamentally sound and give them a more clear plan for what they're supposed to be doing, then you're not as upset about the offensive line right now. A lot of it, I will 100% put a boatload of the blame on Bobby Slowick for the way the offensive line operated last year, partly by virtue of the fact that I don't think he had a clue about offensive line play and how to design a run game or how to execute a run game. So I think I'm optimistic that the O-line will be better this year, even without huge talent upgrades, just because last year they were playing like a bad high school team at times.
Yep, it was sloppy. Contract extensions. They've given one to Derek Stingley Jr., a big one. They gave a nice big extension for a 1 year to Danielle Hunter, $35.6 million. We know they got Nico Collins extended last year. We asked Nick Caserio yesterday, is it presumptuous to think you've basically given out the blueprint for Houston Texan players to get a contract extension?
Good player, good attitude. Go out there, be productive, work hard, put the team first, and you'll be rewarded. But I think when you look at the overall composition of the team and the mindset, and D'Amico has talked about this, what are the things that we're looking for? What do we prioritize? What a Houston Texan football player should look like or what we want it to look like? Understanding every player is different. Everyone has strengths. Everyone has areas that they can improve. We feel like we're pretty fortunate that we have a lot of good football players on this team, in this building. And, you know, those players, they earn what they receive. We don't give out anything. Like, this isn't like, okay, come in here and we're just going to give you. You get what you earn, and the contracts are the contracts, and every situation is going to be a little bit different.
I like that he led with good player. What's the key to getting a contract extension? Yeah, well, first, you got to be good at football.
No, if you go back to the way that Bill O'Brien operated at times, I think he almost wanted to reward the effort almost with disregard to the actual product. And it's dangerous because you can have a team full of guys who do everything the right way, but if they're not actually good at football, then it's all for naught. So you have to be a little bit more choosy in rewarding not just the effort, but also the end result as well.
Yes.
So Nick Martin was the classic example. Okay, great. Great. He steals equipment from the weight room so he can work out at home. Awesome. But I'd like him to be a good center before you pay him like a top five center. Mm-hmm. Can you please do that?
Yeah, man. Dude, Nick Martin's name is the first one that popped into my head when you started talking there. I'm like, yeah, if you operate the way Bill O'Brien did, you get a team full of Nick Martins with a couple stars.
Yeah, the sweet spot is the guys who play the guys who work their asses off, and maybe they're not that talented, but they do everything that you want them to do. Those are the guys you can get at good discount deals. Those guys are the kind of guys that like to stick around. They like being on a team, you know.
They can still
serve a role. It's just that you want to be able to retain those guys at the right price. You can't start rewarding the effort and not the result at the price of guys who deliver the results.
Yeah.
You go broke real quick that way.
I think Nick and D'Amico are onto, I think they've got a really good philosophy and they're onto something with how to build this thing moving forward. Now, it's going to get trickier when you got to pay Will Anderson and C.J. Stroud. That's just math. It's going to get harder. Here's where I was going with this, Seth, is that I think Nick's got a methodology and he knows what the line is to draw. Unlike Bill O'Brien, who didn't know where the line was to draw and what constitutes a player worthy of an extension, I think Nick and D'Amico have a pretty good idea of that. Similarly, I think that they're comfortable with that layer of the roster you're talking about, that discount layer of the roster. I think they've created an environment here that's enticing to guys who are in that tier of player that they can come here, play well, especially on the defensive side of the football, and go somewhere else and get rewarded, or even, you know, in the case of a guy like Dalton Schultz, get rewarded by the Texans. You know, I think they've got a pretty good beat on what aisles to be shopping in for different things.
You know what we are, Sean?
What's that?
They've turned themselves into a queer eye for the straight guy. They're a guy that, just quite kind of a disheveled mess.
Mm-hmm.
Shows up in Houston for a while, and all of a sudden, like, he's got duvet covers and stuff. And he's the women find him more enticing.
Did he start to comb his hair and learn how to dress this way?
Did you see that? It looks like he trimmed his beard at least within the last 2 weeks.
That's the magnificent Gladstone looking at Eric Murray. Like, whoa, I've watched Eric Murray before, but this Eric Murray, Here's 3 years, $22 million, Eric Murray. Wow.
We need to get Nick to do one of those Z snaps when he comes. Yeah.
As McLean would say, not going to happen.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Jalen Petrie is the player who I think is probably closest to, should be closest to getting an extension, if I had to guess. We asked Nick about a possible Jalen Petrie extension yesterday on the show.
Yeah, I'd say we're having conversations with a number of players. And, you know, we've talked about this. You guys kind of know how we operate. Mm-hmm. Like, we're pretty flexible and open-minded. Like, we don't have a finite, well, if, you know, we don't get it done by September 1st and it's off the table. I think at some point, for everybody's best interest, you might say, hey, look, let's try to figure this out, you know, over the next few weeks and or whenever. Don't really want to comment specifically on any individual discussions with any players, but I would say always open-minded to having a dialogue with the player and representatives and trying to figure out an agreement that everybody feels comfortable with, because the goal is for both entities and both parties to be happy with how it went. You don't want to have, we're not trying to quote-unquote win a negotiation. Yeah. We don't believe in that. That's not how we operate. You want something where the organization wins and the player feels valued and they feel like, you know, you've made them a priority. So, you know, we'll work through those things. But Jalen's been a good player. It's the day he walked in the building. He's had a significant impact on our program. That's the type of player that you'd like to have around here as long as possible. So we'll kind of see how all that works itself out.
I believe I believe everything Nick said right there, except at the very beginning where he said, we're having conversations with a number of players right now. I'm looking at the roster. I'm like, who else could you be possibly talking about an extension with right now?
It's not always a guy that's, you know, in his third year or going into his fourth year.
Yeah.
And this is perfect because it also leads to the discussion about, all right, when you have this process of rewarding guys and extending them, et cetera, jealousy can creep in from other players.
Oh, yeah.
If they're not identified as one of those ones. So Malik Collins got a 2-year extension. And, you know, that wasn't on his rookie deal, but he got a 2-year extension in June of 2023.
Right.
Lo and behold, who saw that and started to get agitated?
Stevie Ray Nelson.
Nelson was not happy about the fact that they had extended Malik Collins and that he didn't get his. So that got kind of ugly over an extended period of time.
That's a good point.
With Steven Nelson. And without speaking about Steven Nelson's situation individually, just from my perspective, like, I've been on teams where you can see a guy, and it's ugly. You'll see a guy get an extension on a team, and you can see the look of anger and, like, the scowl on the face of the dude who's jealous that he didn't get an extension.
You can pick the guy out right away, huh?
Yeah. Sometimes they're open about it and will just be loudly blabbing about it. That's where it comes down to you gotta try to stock the right kinds of dudes as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because at the very least, okay, there might be a guy that feels like, hey, wait a second, you guys need to pay me too. But then there's the next level of guys who will actively despise the guy who did get the extension.
Yeah.
And now, again, I'm not saying that's who Steven Nelson was at all. I'm just saying from my own personal experience.
Yep.
Like that's the murky area that there are hurt feelings. And as a coach and as a GM and everybody else, you got to be comfortable with a certain element of that. There's always going to be some dynamic with that in a locker room. You just got to be able to be sure that you're managing it and you don't have too many guys like that.
You think there's a Petrie extension coming this offseason? You had to guess. Total guess, obviously.
You know what? I think they're. I wouldn't be surprised if the Texans try to, or at least, you know, approach them about it.
I definitely a lot of just comes think that.
But I don't think it won't be for a jaw-dropping number.
Yeah.
I could see Jalen Petrie betting on himself.
Yes.
And thinking, like, hey, he was playing out of position for the first couple years. Last year it looked like, man, he'd found his niche, and then he gets injured. So I think the Texans, my gut would be that the Texans want to get him at a good, reasonable price, $10 million a year or something like that. And Jalen Petrie, I wouldn't, I wouldn't think he was wrong at all for thinking, you know what, I think I've got more in me, and I want to just really go out and just play my ass off this year and see what happens.
I agree with everything you just said, that I could 100% see the Texans side of it. And then, and we've seen that Nick Caserio with these extensions, you know, Nico Collins got done in May. Stingley's extension got done a week after the league year started, like a week after he was eligible for it, he got it.
Yeah.
You know, Danielle Hunter, you start to watch that edge rusher market go into the $40 million a year range, and I think it was shrewd business to jump in there and get him for another year at about $4 or $5 million less than where the market was going before Micah Parsons gets his deal done, whenever that happens. So, the you know, there's only been a few of these. It's a small sample size, and the ones we're using as sort of the data point on this are Nico Collins, Derek Stingley Jr., and Danielle Hunter, but particularly Nico and Stingley, because those were draft picks of Nick Caserio. Both of those got done much earlier than most teams would be doing those deals. So so I think that's, that we'll see what happens with Petrie. Jalen Petrie is going to have a new teammate in the secondary this year. His name is C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Here was Nick Caserio yesterday with us on C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
I would say specific to C.J., say Howie and I have a really good relationship. We've done a lot of deals together. You know, when those conversations take place, it really honestly really don't take too long. But it's a relationship business in the end, and we're not afraid to talk to anybody. So, you know, even the situation going back to Kirk. So, you know, James and I didn't really know each other, haven't worked together. But, you know, we're pretty open-minded here. Like, we'll work with anybody. We'll kind of get kind of straight to the point. Hey, and just try to have some open dialogue. And that's part of the responsibility in the chair in which I sit, is you want to be open. You can't be, and what's the worst the thing that somebody can say? It's no. Okay, mm-hmm. No problem. Then you move on to the next thing. So you never take it personally, but, you know, Howie and I have always had a lot of good discussions, a lot of good dialogue. We're not afraid to do deals. We kind of go back and forth. And this one happened to work itself out the way it did. CJ's been a good player. He's had a positive impact, a couple of different programs. It's been really productive with his opportunities. So that's all we care about, is when a player walks in the building, is just come in here, do the things that, you know, D'Amico asks of you as a player, be a good teammate, and go out there and play good football. So, you know, we think CJ can help us in the secondary, which is why we made the acquisition that we did.
I should have clarified. My question was about CJ Gardner-Johnson, but part of it was like, hey, how does a deal like that come about? You know, when the guy's about to get cut and you're able to kind of swoop in and make a trade, because Nick's done that now three times in the last 2 years with Joe Mixon, Christian Kirk, and now CJ Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah, and with it's an interesting one with the Eagles, because I think typically something like Kenyon Green, Kenyon Green's the kind of one where maybe you let some teams know that you're going to release him. This is the type of trade that usually happens. You let somebody know that you're going to release him, and then the team says, okay, well, listen, how about we give you a sixth round pick for him?
Yep.
So we don't have to try to get him in free agency or whatever.
Yep.
That's like what happened with, was it Tom Savage with the Falcons?
It was TJ Yates.
That's right, TJ Yates. They announced they were going to cut him, and then the Falcons came in. But then for the Eagles, instead of a draft pick, saying, no, we're actually going to give you this really good safety, because we've got to clear out space for all these other contracts we're giving out.
Yeah.
It's unique. It's unique. And the biggest one thing I wonder with CJ Gardner-Johnson is, he's a high energy guy. He's got a lot of personality. He's not afraid to go after Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce on social media or in t-shirt form. People wonder, okay, does he kind of have a shelf life? Is he a guy that, hey, we love him, he produces, but I don't know. That's all I'm saying. I have zero clue. So there's a little bit of it feels too good to be true to it. I'm not buyer beware. He was very valuable for the Eagles. There's a little part of it that just still feels a little too good to be true.
I hear a little bit of that in the tone about the answers I've heard from people within the Texans about CJ Gardner-Johnson. And I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily. He's a live wire.
Like, he's on his third team now.
He's a crazy kind of swarm. There's benevolent swarming, and then there's CJ Gardner-Johnson, who's just a little crazy. You know, he's just he plays on the outer reaches of the dark side of the swarm, you know?
This would be my hope. Whatever it is, with his personality quirks and idiosyncrasies, whatever it might be. The most impressive displays of restraint I saw in the Super Bowl was when the Eagles would take Travis Kelce, who's known for getting away with antagonizing people and drawing personal fouls out of people. They antagonized the hell out of Travis Kelce. And one of those was after Travis Kelce got hit with a clean and legal hit, he got up trying to get in people's faces like he does. And CJ Gardner-Johnson just stood there with his hands behind his
back. Hands behind his back is the key. Hands behind his back.
Tito Cook, but smirking at him.
Yes.
Like just trying to draw something from Travis Kelce.
Hands behind the back was the key.
That was, it was a very passive aggressive, like non confrontation. Yeah.
I loved it. Okay, now I'm super stoked about him being on the Texans.
This is my dream for CJ Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah.
Now that in football years, he's, how old is he, 28?
27.
27.
Yeah.
All right, that's like being in real life, maybe like a 36 or 37-year-old.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's going to be like Clint Eastwood's character in Unforgiven.
Okay.
Where, sure, he had a past. Sure, he may have killed women and children. But he's a different guy now, mm-hmm. okay? And he's still got that outlaw to him, mm-hmm. obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a restrained outlaw.
Yeah, I don't know. Do we really even want the restrained version of CJ Gardner? I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't want the earlier version of Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven.
Yeah, probably
sounded
not.
Like a horrible person.
Probably not. Is this someone's asking on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line about a comparison of bringing in CJ Gardner-Johnson with bringing in Stephon Diggs last year. Is this different than the Stephon Diggs situation?
Yeah, for a couple reasons. One, he's still not he's not as marquee a player as Stephon Diggs.
Yes.
And then two, I think you're adding a veteran player into a group that was already very promising and good, but isn't as, like, a safety is not the same impact as a wide receiver.
Definitely not that wide receiver either.
You're right. Or just like that, the position in general.
Sure.
So his ability to take the ball away and everything else, I think, can be a really great addition. But it's not a make it or break it. And it's on the side of the ball where they actually know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Last year it was still an offense that showed promise in 2023, but wasn't a genuinely good offense.
Correct.
They were trying to use Stephon Diggs as one of the things that could really punctuate it and turn them into a good offense. So it's just there's a lot of different dynamics. I don't think it's more of a classic, okay, you got a guy in on a reasonable 2-year deal.
Yeah.
You gave up Kenyon Green for him.
Yeah.
You traded a second round pick for Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
And redid his deal into a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
There's nothing even remotely close to these two.
Deals. And if this texter were sitting in the room with us and this is all the text says, is this different than Stephon Diggs? My follow up would be, in what way? You know, like, asking.
No, I think, okay. And actually, in a lot of ways, he's probably talking about the personality side.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah,
right?
All right. I don't remember reading about CJ Gardner-Johnson having issues with his teammates.
No, at all.
And obviously the epilogue to the Stephon Diggs was that he was a model teammate.
He was great.
And a model veteran leader.
Yep. Yeah. Text message. In Dungeons & Dragons terms, we just don't know if CJ Gardner-Johnson is chaotic good or chaotic evil.
Oh, what is there? There's a chaotic play?
I guess.
You just don't know. Like, you're just throwing it out there and it can be good or it can be bad.
Have you ever, when you were a kid, did you ever play Dungeons & Dragons?
No. Remember, we talked about this a couple years ago, how I've always been curious. I'd like to get into it, but it feels like it would be a big time investment. One of our listeners invited you and I to some coffee house where they play
right.
a lot.
That's right. Okay.
We never followed through on
it. No, we should. That would be interesting to go play a little game of D&D with our listeners and see what that's all about.
To have somebody looking over your shoulder to help you make the right
No, I would want to play. I actually played a little bit like at the same age the kids in Stranger Things were at when they were playing it.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing like when we were kids in the 80s and the 90s that a lot of kids played it and then some just stuck with it and then others were like, it just got to be like too much for me, like the investment in all the books. I just never knew what the end game was in all
of
it.
You got to buy books?
There's books. Yeah, dude, I remember one Christmas, I asked for all the D&D books. My parents were like, wow, this is a lot of money for these books. Yeah.
If I were going to revisit one thing from my youth that I kind of just quit, like never tried or quit along the lines of Dungeons & Dragons, it would just be the simple Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
I think, you know what, I might just get a Rubik's Cube and just learn online how to solve it and everything. I don't need to break any records or anything, but I'd like to, you know what, I'd like to be the annoying guy that walks in and is like, oh, what's that, a Rubik's Cube? And then act like I haven't seen one in 10 years and just... And then,
yeah, like the way they saw... Did you ever get to where you could solve it or at least get one side of it or anything
Yeah, I remember, I don't know how many, like you get one or two sides and you feel like you conquered the world.
Yeah, I remember like I got the Rubik's Cube 1 year, spent a year completely frustrated. So my parents, as a stocking stuffer the next year, got the little manual on how to solve the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
So they were like, I guess they got tired
of me.
I did. I learned how to solve
it. So you learned
how
to solve it?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Not super fast like those people on TV do it, but I had to kind of look, and the corners are the key is what I remember. I couldn't do it today. It's not, that muscle memory's gone of being able to
but
do it.
But it is. It's not like you have to be a super genius. You just got to be able to learn and practice the technique for
memorize sequences. Yeah.
Oh, you got to memorize stuff?
Yeah. Or? Well, a little bit. I mean, yeah.
I just said Brendan Rodgers instead of Christian Walker.
You have to memorize stuff in so much as eventually you don't want to do it with the manual sitting right in front of you. You know what I mean? Like
manual says, can you remember the name of your favorite baseball team's second baseman? If not, don't buy this book.
Exactly.
Which is a pretty good sales pitch for most people. They'd be like, hell yeah. Oh, sure I can. I'll buy this book.
This is it? That's all I've got to do?
For me, it's a big barrier.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. All right, let's get to the mock draft injection, shall we? Mock draft injection time. And this one is one where we've seen we've seen this one mocked to the Texans quite a bit, and it's I don't know, more and more it's looking like this is who the guy might be. This is the guy who's leading Drew Doherty's mock draft roundup right now. So stay tuned. It's Maurice Jones-Drew mock draft, NFL.com, coming up next.